Hello, I'm Christine, a newsreader on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 7th of July 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post: this remains in paper envelopes, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Tanya, Craig, Helen, Ian, Simon, Angela, Liz, Christine, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country, we have the quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a feature on the Impressionist painter Claude Monet, the weather, Craig's Black Country joke book, news about new scientific research into how echolocation could help people with sight loss, and rounding all that off, we get to hear from Graham Fisher and his feature, In My Opinion. But first we have our Guess the Sound quiz. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later alongside the usual quiz answers. Now we start as always with some local news, brought to us by Angela, Ian, Ed, Liz, and first up, it's Christine.
Visiting has been suspended again at a Black Country Hospital Trust due to COVID cases in the community. A limited rollout of visiting was introduced 2 months ago by the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, but this has now been scrapped. As well as affecting New Cross Hospital, the change means visitors are no longer allowed at Cannock Chase and West Park hospitals. Hospital bosses say they will be reviewing the COVID cases in the community on a weekly basis. Services will continue to run as normal and all scheduled appointments will continue. While the University Hospitals of North Midlands NHS Trust, the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust and Walsall Healthcare NHS Trust confirmed visiting was continuing on their sites. A statement from Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust said, "We are working hard to prevent the spread of COVID-19 and to protect staff, patients and visitors from becoming seriously ill. With this in mind, we have made the decision to temporarily pause the limited pilot rollout of visiting to our wards at New Cross, Cannock Chase and West Park hospitals. We can appreciate this may be frustrating for the family and friends of patients, but we can assure you that it is the safest precaution to take at this time. We will be reviewing the cases in the community on a weekly basis and will update you via our website and social media feeds." It added, "Services are unaffected and will continue to run as normal. All scheduled appointments will continue as normal unless patients have been individually contacted and told otherwise. Anyone who is coming in for an appointment is asked to wear a face mask and social distance as well as taking a lateral flow test. We would also encourage everyone to book a vaccine by calling 119.
Almost 6 in 10 adults across the Black Country and part of Birmingham have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19, figures show. NHS data showed a total of 607,405 people have received their second jab across the Black Country and West Birmingham areas. And more than 7 in 10 adults have now had at least one dose in the region, with a total of 817,954 vaccines delivered so far. It comes after almost 16,000 people were vaccinated last weekend as part of a major push by health chiefs to get people jabbed up. Sally Roberts, Chief Nursing Officer for Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group, said, "It's fantastic to see so many people coming forward to receive their COVID-19 vaccine, with 607,405 already fully vaccinated in the region. While the first dose of the vaccine does give good protection from the virus, the second dose gives you an increased and longer-lasting defence, so it's incredibly important that you get the second dose as soon as it's due. I want to encourage everyone to keep coming forward for the COVID-19 vaccine and for the crucial second dose when the offer comes. It could save your life and protect your loved ones." Adults over the age of 40 can now receive their second dose after 8 weeks, with all other adults eligible for their second dose after 12 weeks, with doses available through appointments or by walk-in locations in the area. Health chiefs have said the move is necessary to combat the threat posed by the Delta variant first found in India, which has been surging across the region and nationwide. People who had their first vaccine through their GP should be contacted about their second dose. People who booked via the NHS website or through 119 should have booked both appointments at the same time.
Rows over controversial Black Country housing plans are set to rumble on. Since its publication last week, the draft Black Country plan has sent shockwaves across the region, with some questioning why so much greenbelt land has been lined up for development. Others have breathed a sigh of relief after sites including the Seven Cornfields and Corbett Meadow, both the subject of long-running campaigns to save them, were left out of the plan altogether. And the West Midlands Mayor has now waded in, announcing the launch of a review aimed at replacing greenbelt sites earmarked in the plan with old industrial land. Under the Black Country plan, the greenbelt could be carved up to make way for 7,720 houses and 47.8 hectares, 118.1 acres, of land for employment purposes. Sites under threat include two plots in Dudley King's Winford's North and Wallheath Ward, where around 870 homes could be built. More than 300 homes are lined up for two sites in Bushbury, Wolverhampton, and land north of Painswick Close in Yew Tree, Great Bar, has been put forward for 120 homes. A campaign launched to save Grapes Pool Field in Bilston, which has been earmarked in the plan for 85 homes, already has nearly 1,000 supporters. Planners insist there is not enough brownfield land available to meet the region's housing need of 71,459 new homes by 2039, meaning some greenbelt sites will have to be developed. The four council cabinets will vote on the Black Country plan proposals between July the 5th and 7th. If approved, it will go out for an 8-week public consultation in August.
A police chief has launched a new service to help victims of hate crime after incidents surged by more than 2/5 in the West Midlands. Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Foster said the 41% rise over 2020-21 during the pandemic was not acceptable. It has led him to launch the service, which will be run by Remedy, to offer emotional, personal and practical support for victims in the region. Mr. Foster said, "We have seen a sharp rise in hate crimes during the pandemic. Last year, there were over 9,000 hate crime incidents reported to West Midlands Police. This new service will support victims and those who have been subjected to hate crimes. It is not acceptable, and we will not tolerate hate crime in the West Midlands. Nobody should be subject to abuse because of who they are. If you are subject to a hate crime, report it. It will be taken seriously by West Midlands Police." The service has been funded through a £200,000 cash boost from the PCC's Victims Fund following a competitive process, with the service accepting referrals from police and agencies, along with those who want to refer themselves. Michelle Bailey, the West Midlands manager for Remedy, said, "We are extremely proud to be delivering such a needed service that will cover the whole of the West Midlands. We will work closely with partner agencies and West Midlands Police to ensure that a consistent, flexible and victim-led support service is provided to all communities and individuals."
Business bosses have called for the changes in furlough to be deferred until the final stage of the roadmap out of lockdown, saying jobs will go. Corin Crane, CEO of the Black Country Chamber of Commerce, said the heroic national investment will be wasted if the government plans to shift some of the burden of paying for furloughed workers to businesses continues. From Thursday, employers will have to pick up 10% of their furloughed workers' salaries, rising to 20% in August and September. The latest figures from HM Revenue and Customs show that 66,200 jobs held by workers living across the Black Country and Staffordshire were furloughed in May. That was 30,200 fewer than the 96,400 furloughed at the end of April. Corin Crane said, "The taper of government payments into the furlough scheme should be deferred until we take the final step in the roadmap, and further grant support should be extended to the worst affected businesses. A month's delay may seem like a short time, but for businesses in retail, hospitality and leisure, legally closed from trading or relying on the summer season, the delay is another blow. The country has invested billions in keeping people in work ready for recovery. But if the rug is pulled from under businesses too soon, jobs will go and our heroic national investment will be wasted. Nobody is arguing for eternal furlough, but the government has to work with employers to chart a new course through the pandemic. One that in the longer term recognises short-term business and economic disruption, which does the least damage to the economy and the livelihoods of millions of working people."
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen, back with news of everything that's been happening at Beacon. First up, what is happening with the weather? Where's summer gone? There's rumour of another heatwave on the way. Let's hope so, eh? And talking of summer, we've got a joke for you. You ready? Why did the sun go to school? Well, so get brighter, of course. Don't all laugh at once. Rubbish jokes aside, if you've got sight loss, the glare from the sun can be a real pain. If you want to reduce glare, why not try a pair of filter glasses? If you want to try a pair of Cocoon filter glasses and find the right lens and frame to make life more comfortable, give us a call on 01902 880111 and ask for a sight loss advisor. Next up, we'd like to say thank you so much to everyone who nominated Beacon in the Movement for Good Awards recently. We're delighted to let you know that we've won. Your incredible support means the world to us, especially at the moment given the devastating impact the pandemic had on our members and our charity. The £1,000 prize will help us ensure that someone with sight loss isn't left feeling alone because of their condition. And in other exciting news this week, we reopened our Canic store. We've had a presence in the town for almost 10 years, so we're absolutely delighted to be enabled to move to a new central location. The store was officially opened by the chairman of Canic Chase District Council, that's Councillor Doug Smith, our chair of trustees, Kathy Roper, our chief executive, Lisa Cowley, and shop manager, Ruby Bell. If you're in the area, the team would love to meet you. They're based at 19 Market Place, Canic, and open Monday to Saturday, 9 a.m. till 4:30 p.m. Next up this week, we're recruiting volunteers for our telephone befriending service. Our amazing volunteers make the world of difference to the people they help, and knowing that they are supporting others, well, it actually helps them as well. We're on the lookout for new people to join them. Our volunteers come from a range of backgrounds and are a range of ages. What they have in common are kindness and compassion. Why not join them and give the gift of your time for a few hours a week? Contact people at beaconvision.org and make a difference. And if you think you benefit from the scheme rather than wanting to volunteer, why not sign up? It's free to join and we're happy to welcome new members. Call us on 01902 880 111 Monday to Friday to find out more. Lastly this week, it's recently been Glaucoma Awareness Week. Did you know that you have at least a 4 times higher risk of developing glaucoma if you have a close blood relative with it? The earlier it's detected, the more successful the treatment is likely to be in controlling it and preventing sight loss. So please encourage them to get a sight test at least every 2 years. Right, that's it for this week. Hopefully, next time we speak, we'll be able to celebrate having had a bit of sun. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Now we have another block of local news, brought to us by Christine, Ed, Angela, Ian, and starting us off, it's Liz.
Formal plans for a new police superstation in the Black Country are set to be submitted later this year, it can be revealed. West Midlands Police wants to build a station on land off Hall Street, Dudley, but the project has been hit with a series of stumbling blocks over legal issues. Now it appears that movement could be on the horizon after Dudley North MP Marco Longhi said he was hopeful that a planning application would be submitted in September. The station will serve as a police headquarters for the Black Country and will also be a replacement for the town's old station on New Street, which closed in 2017. Dozens of police stations have closed across the region in recent years as part of cost-cutting measures. Hopes of progress on the new site in Dudley were raised after a meeting was held between Mr. Longhi, Dudley Council Leader Patrick Harley, and the West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner. Conservative MP Mr. Longhi said he was determined to see work start on the project this year, and that up to now there had been too much talk and not enough action. He said council chiefs were fully behind the station, which he believed would form a fundamental part of the community and act as a key gateway for community engagement to help tackle crime. Speaking in March, West Midlands Police Chief Constable Sir David Thompson said the force was very, very keen to build the station and that delays were down to legal complexities around the site. The land, which sits next to Alan Nuttall Limited, was earmarked for a mosque for years, but the scheme was scrapped in 2017.
Children in the West Midlands are facing physical and mental health challenges as a result of cuts to grassroots sports clubs. Analysis into the impact of COVID-19 on young people has found that cities including Birmingham and Wolverhampton, where a higher proportion of children live in low-income households, have been harder hit than the rest of the UK. It says that in the West Midlands, almost 370,000 children are not currently getting their recommended 60 minutes of exercise per day. This amounts to 45% of all children in the region and is largely due to a drop in the number of grassroots sports and recreational clubs available for children to take part in. Research has shown that vital extracurricular activities have been suspended in 72% of primary schools nationally for the current academic year. Children who stay active are 15.5 times less likely to suffer from obesity than those who don't. Inactivity also affects mental health. Data shows that children who regularly play team sports feel 6% happier and 12% more satisfied with life on average when compared to those who don't play sport. Sports organisations have been among the hardest hit by the pandemic, with research showing that UK sports clubs lost as many as 60% of their members and 96% of all grassroots football clubs have seen a reduction in income during the pandemic due to lack of fundraising opportunities and loss of sponsorship. It is estimated that 240,000 fewer children will be able to swim 25 metres by the end of this academic year as a result of suspended swimming lessons and leisure centre closures. Similarly, it is estimated that 73% of gymnastics clubs are at risk, with 55% facing permanent closure.
twice weekly testing for children in schools is critical to bringing down fast rising rates of COVID-19 in Dudley, chiefs have said. Dudley Council said infection rates have more than doubled in the borough over the last week, with testing necessary to curb cases. And leaders have called on parents to get their children tested and to ignore posts on social media calling for tests to be boycotted. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of the council, said, "I have been infuriated to read social media posts this week urging parents to boycott the twice weekly testing programme we have reintroduced into schools. At a time when COVID rates in the borough are on a worrying rise, it is stupid and unhelpful. Data suggests the rise in cases is sharpest in young people. Introducing twice weekly testing allows us to quickly identify positive cases and get children to self-isolate. It means 29 children out of a class of 30 can still be in school instead of having to send the whole class home, which also has a knock-on effect for parents having to self-isolate and miss work. It is critical." Councillor Nicholas Barlow, Cabinet Member for Health and Adult Social Care, added, "I'm extremely concerned at the latest attempts on social media to destabilise the outstanding work at Dudley Council. Dismissing and countering the message we are trying to get out to people to try and bring down the concerning rise in cases of COVID in the borough is unacceptable and downright irresponsible. The end date of July the 19th is clearly in sight, and we all need to work together for one last push to make sure we are ready to return to some kind of normality."
A Wolverhampton pub could lose its licence after allegedly putting customers at risk by committing a number of COVID-19 safety breaches. Officers are calling on the Wolverhampton Licensing Subcommittee to strip Rocket Pools Inn on Rocket Pool Drive in Bradley of its licence when it meets next week. Evidence submitted by authority licensing officers and West Midlands Police states coronavirus regulations were breached on different occasions in August and December last year, and again in April this year. Alleged offences include overcrowding, failure to wear face masks, people drinking standing up, more than six people at a table, and a failure to implement a number of prevention control measures. Officers also said CCTV footage obtained from the premises showed a clear breach of the regulations and an inability to manage the challenge of customers. Charlotte Rose, the Council Environment Health COVID Compliance Officer, said, "There has been a flagrant disregard to uphold the licensing objectives, comply with conditions of licence and ensure that the premises were COVID secure by continuing to flout the requirements set by law during the emergency period. Patrons were unnecessarily put at risk with a clear lack of management." Amy Taylor, West Midlands Police Licensing and Regulatory Officer, added, "The premise licence holder has failed to comply with the conditions of their licence and failed to ensure that their premises is COVID secure. From my experience dealing with these premises, it is clear that the premise license holder does not manage this premises to the standard West Midlands Police Licensing would expect."
The mass vaccination centre at the Black Country Living Museum has closed its doors after delivering more than 125,000 doses of the COVID jab. The Black Country Living Museum, which was the area's first large vaccination site to open in January, administered its final jabs on Sunday, the 27th of June. It opened its doors as part of the rollout of large-scale vaccination centres across the country, and since then has been administering first and second COVID jabs to the local community. It even remained open for vaccinations when the popular museum reopened its doors to visitors in May under the government's roadmap out of lockdown. NHS leaders have since thanked the staff and volunteers who have worked at the site for the last 6 months. Sally Roberts, Chief Nursing Officer for the Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group, CCG, and local vaccination programme lead, said, "Having the Black Country Living Museum come on board early as our first large vaccination centre has played a huge part in the success of the vaccine rollout across the region, with a remarkable 125,000 jabs delivered to date. There's no doubt that the opening of the site gave us the capability to administer thousands more jabs to local people that wouldn't have been possible before. I would like to say a big thank you to all the staff and volunteers who have spent the last 6 months working tirelessly to ensure as many people as possible are protected against the virus.
Now it's time to head over to Mina, who, as always, has the questions for this week's quiz.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. When was the term the Third World coined? Question 2. When did an X first used as a kiss to end a letter? Question 3. What well-used slogan first appeared on posters in the 1940s in Britain? Question 4. What was hidden in the Eiffel Tower when it was built? Question 5. The duffel coat is named after a town. Where is that town? And question 6. What was found in a flask in a tomb in China in 2019? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck.
Thanks for those questions, Mina. Tough this week. Now we head over to more local news. Starting us off, it's Ed.
Two domestic ducklings have been found dumped in a plastic tub at a Wolverhampton park. Officers from the RSPCA were alerted after a member of the public found tiny ducklings at Fowler's Park off Nine Elms Lane on Saturday. The ducklings were struggling in the mudflat near a pond at the park and were lucky to be found as stormy weather hit the area. RSPCA Inspector Kate Barker raced to the scene and rescued the ducklings before transferring them to Q1 Wildlife Rescue in Much Wenlock, Shropshire, who will now provide ongoing care for the birds. Anyone with information about the abandonment has been urged to contact the RSPCA's Inspectorate Appeal Line. The charity has also urged the public never to abandon animals and to always seek help, support or advice if they are struggling to provide care. Dumping ducklings could constitute an offence under the Animal Welfare Act. Miss Parker said, "It's so important people know that it is never okay to abandon an animal, even ducks at a pond. These domestic ducklings would really have struggled, but fortunately, they are now in the safe care of our friends at Q1 Wildlife Rescue in Much Wenlock. If people are struggling to care for an animal, there is so much they can do to look for help, but abandonments are never the answer. Treating an animal like that can also constitute an offence under the Animal Welfare Act." She added, "Anyone with information about how these ducklings ended up at Fowler's Park off of Nine Elms Lane in Wolverhampton can contact our Inspector Appeal Line on 0300 123 8018.
Marks & Spencer's has shut its 29 in-store bank branches as part of the national move to online banking. The branches, including one in the M&S at the Merryhill Shopping Centre in Brierley Hill, closed on Friday. The Merryhill branch originally opened in October 2012. The current accounts of customers, including premium accounts and monthly savers, will also be shutting down on August the 31st. Services will be moved to online, mobile and telephone channels. Customers are no longer able to deposit any money or get any banking advice in person at any M&S stores. Only a very small proportion of M&S's 3 million customers are current account customers. The closures are part of the growing trend of high street bank customers servicing their accounts online or by telephone. The bank is refocusing on products and services with new payment solutions on the way. James Andrews, Senior Personal Finance Editor at money.co.uk, said, "The closure of the in-store branches might not be a big deal to customers who already manage their accounts online, but those used to in-person services and unwilling or unable to use remote banking could miss out. However, everyone with an M&S current account needs to act fast and make sure they either switch or close their account before August the 31st. After this date, your account will be closed completely and you won't be able to access your money or make any debit or credit transactions."
More than £2 million is being spent to install almost 10 kilometres of brand new pipes across an area of Wolverhampton to help reduce leaks and bursts. Severn Trent has announced the move, which will see 9 kilometres of pipes replaced over the Bantock Park area, with work starting up last month. It is expected to take approximately 7 months to complete, with work starting on Hughes Avenue, and will move from street to street across the area. Catherine Webb from Severn Trent said, "We know it's still a challenging time for many people right now, but making sure our customers have a reliable water supply is as vital now as it's ever been. That's why residents in Wolverhampton will see our teams working in the area to carry out these essential upgrades. The old pipes are up to 50 years old in places and are getting a bit leaky at times. Now is the right time to replace them with brand new pipes, and by doing so we think we'll be saving the equivalent of 80,000 litres of water or 140,780 pints of beer a day. We'll be doing everything we can to minimise the disruption, and we'd like to thank everyone in advance for their patience as we get this essential work done. Once all of the work is complete, the area will have a modern and reliable water network that will last for generations."
Plans for a dog DNA database to help combat a rise in pet theft have been backed by a Black Country MP. Suzanne Webb says she is supporting new legislation in Parliament which would require dog owners to register the DNA of their pets. The Conservative MP said the new law would serve as an effective deterrent to dog napping and also make it impossible for thieves to claim ownership of pets they had stolen. Figures released in April revealed that dog thefts have surged during lockdown and were up by 37% over the last 5 years, with an estimated 2,438 thefts reported to police in 2020. Ms. Webb said, "I would be absolutely heartbroken if my dog was stolen, and I know that many people are extremely worried about the rise of thefts at the moment and how difficult it is to prove ownership if the dog is found. Having a dog DNA database would make it impossible for thieves to claim any ownership, as it is an indelible marker. I also believe it would act as an effective deterrent. I hope the government will be supportive of the bill when it comes before Parliament. It certainly has my support and, I'm sure, the support of dog lovers across the West Midlands."
Dudley's old police station will be converted into new apartments after standing empty for 4 years. Planning officers at Dudley Council gave the green light to proposals to create 14 flats on the basement and ground floor levels of the building on the corner of New Street in the town centre. The building was closed in 2017 as part of cost-cutting measures. Agents Planning Design and Build Limited said the redevelopment will feature 11 one-bedroom and 3 two-bedroom apartments. One of them will be created where the old cells were, giving people a unique view once enjoyed by prisoners. After granting planning permission, officers said the proposed development is acceptable in principle, causes no harm to amenity, and would have significant impact on the historic environment. Moreover, there are no fundamental highway safety concerns. In dealing with this, the authority worked with the applicant in a positive and proactive manner, seeking solutions to problems arising in relation to dealing with the application by seeking to help the applicant resolve technical detail issues where required and maintaining the delivery of sustainable development. The development would improve the economic, social and environmental concerns of the area. In the application, Planning, Design and Build Limited said the proposal will enhance the character of the conservation area by repairing and bringing back into use a locally listed building of previous office use. The proposed use will facilitate the repair and preservation of this existing building to a sustainable use by key workers and students.
Now we head over to the world of science, in which researchers have been looking into echolocation and how this may help people with sight loss. Scientists have successfully trained humans to echolocate like bats in just 10 weeks, in a breakthrough that could one day allow people with sight loss to navigate by clicking their tongues. Echolocation happens when an animal emits a sound that bounces off objects in the environment, returning echoes that provide information about the surrounding space. researchers found that humans could be taught the technique in just 10 weeks and said patients with sight loss could be prescribed echolocation training to improve their mobility and independence. Clicking sounds are created by sharply drawing down the middle or front of the tongue off the roof of the mouth once or twice a second. Echoes from the noise are then used to see a person's surroundings. The echo activates the visual processing area in the brain and allows expert echolocators to create a three-dimensional image in their mind. Bats use the skill to navigate and find food in the dark. It helps them determine where an object is, as well as its size and shape. A team of researchers, led by Dr. Laura Fowler of Durham University, looked into the factors that determine how people learn this technique. Over the course of a 10-week training program, the team investigated how blindness and age affected learning of click-based echolocation, and how learning this skill affects the daily life of people who are blind. 12 blind and 14 sighted participants aged between 21 and 79 took part in 20 2-3 week hour training sessions over the study period. Blind participants also took part in a 3-month follow-up survey assessing the effects of the training on their daily lives. Researchers found that both sighted and blind people improved considerably on all measures, and in some cases performed comparatively with expert echolocators at the end of the training. Dr. Fowler said, "I cannot think of any other work with blind participants that has had such enthusiastic feedback. People who took part in our study reported that the training in click-based echolocation had a positive effect on their mobility, independence, and well-being, attesting that the improvements we observed in the lab transcended into positive life benefits outside the lab. We are very excited about this and feel that it would make sense to provide information and training in click-based echolocation to people who may still have good functional vision but are expected to lose vision later in life because of progressive degenerative eye conditions. Click-based echolocation is currently not taught as a part of mobility training and rehabilitation for blind people." And experts say there is also the possibility that some people are reluctant to use it due to a perceived stigma around making the required clicks in social environments. Despite this, the results indicate that people who use echolocation and people new to echolocation are confident about using it in social situations, according to the researchers. Now we have our final block of local news. And starting us off this time, it's Angela.
Pupils at a Dudley school have been praised for their efforts to keep their community clean through a poster competition. The contest, which was won by Woodpecker class at Woodtetton School, saw youngsters design posters aimed at discouraging litter. Claire Wills from the Woodtetton Community Litter Watch Group, which organised the competition, said, "We were so impressed with the work of the young people. The winning design has been turned into a large banner outside the school, and runners-up will see their posters dotted around the local community in the coming weeks." Deputy headteacher Kath Harding added, "We are so lucky to have such dedicated members in our society, making our local environment a safer and a happier place to be. I'm very proud of all our pupils at Woodtetton School for their hard work and efforts as we are working towards our Eco Schools Award. I would like to congratulate Woodpecker Class for creating the winning poster with a very powerful and important message. The winning design was a collective effort by the class and featured the message, 'Don't be dim, use a bin.'" Councillor Adam Aston said, "Sincere thanks to both Woodtetton Community Litter Watch for their ongoing efforts to keep our streets and green spaces clean, and the talented pupils at Woodtetton School for their hard work and enthusiasm for the poster project."
A lasting monument to all those who have passed away in the last year has been unveiled at a city cemetery. A commemorative bench has been unveiled at Danes Court Cemetery in Wolverhampton following months of donations and fundraising from the Wolverhampton Caribbean Community Memorial Trust. The chair of the trust, Angela Verley, said the idea for the commemorative events had started in March 2020 following the death of her father, Rupert Lou, at the age of 87. She said, "My father passed away on March 9th and we were set to have his funeral on March 23rd, which eventually became lockdown day across the country. We went from having the traditional funeral in the Caribbean culture with hundreds of people in attendance and a full church service arranged, to not even being able to carry the coffin and having to leave before we could cover the coffin. My father had been in this community since he was a young man, and we had expected to give him the traditional send-off, so it felt very strange and like we couldn't send him off in the right way. Ms. Verley said she and her family had begun making plans for a remembrance service in his honour, but then began to alter the plans when it became apparent how many people in their community were dying. She said, "By the end of April, I'd counted nearly 40 people that we knew who had died in Wolverhampton, and I realised that there were going to be many people who were going through the same thing as us. We decided to begin work on putting together a memorial service to remember all those people, because there were so many who have passed and we would have been at their funerals." Ms. Verley said she hoped the bench could inspire people in years to come and help remember all those who were lost in the pandemic.
A Black Country chip shop famed for its orange chips is making plans to expand across the region. Major's Fish and Chip Shop in Bilston is one of the most popular chip shops in Wolverhampton, with customers coming from as far as Stafford to sample the orange chips and crispy cod. A project has now been launched by Major's to expand to other towns and cities in the region through a franchise opportunity. Manager Royston Spencer said he has come up with the idea for franchises while sitting down at home during lockdown. He said, "We've been in the process of putting this idea together for the last 6 months, as I had a lot of time at home during lockdown. It's something I'd thought about previously, but never quite got around to it. But we are now getting the ball rolling and looking out to see who's interested. We've been here for 46 years and we want to spread our wings, as Bilston is on the map because of us, and we're offering a unique franchising opportunity." Mr. Spencer said he wanted to see around five franchises set up around the area and has looked at Dudley, Briley Hill and the centre of Wolverhampton as potential locations.
A Black Country tourist attraction is hoping to bounce back from the pandemic by hosting more weddings. The Dudley Canal and Tunnel Trust has submitted an application to have its Birmingham New Road site approved for the solemnisation of marriages and the formation of civil partnerships. It has hosted a number of weddings in the past in its caverns, but bosses hope the new plans to open up the rest of the site will attract more lovebirds to tie the knot there. Chief Executive Tracy Dix Williams said, "This will give us more options to offer the brides and grooms. Previously, you could only get married in the caverns, but this will open up the rest of our facilities. So you could get married in a slightly more conventional place and then have a cavern trip with all your guests. Or you could get married in the caverns and then have your reception in another part of the site. It can be a really magical experience when all the guests get taken in on a boat and get to see the bride brought in. It's a lovely sight. The first wedding took place there more than a quarter of a century ago when Paul Smith and his wife got married. He has since become chairman of Enterprise at the Trust. The application will be considered by Dudley Council."
The work of the NHS and key workers has inspired a Black Country schoolboy to take on a marathon walking challenge. Hayden Bonifoy from Wolverhampton has taken to the pavements, hills and fields around his home in Bushbury to raise more than £500 for NHS Charities Together. The 10-year-old, who goes to school at Fallings Park Primary School, had set out to complete a distance of 26.2 miles, the distance of a marathon, inside 6 weeks, but has already walked more than 56 miles. His mother, Caroline, said he had come to her one day and just said he wanted to raise money for the NHS at the beginning of June. She said he had actually wanted to create a charity shop inside our house, but I suggested he might want to do something in terms of a physical activity, as he's a very active child. So we decided on a walkathon. He has high-functioning autism, so he will end up getting very passionate about something and focusing his energies on it, which is what's happened with this. She said, "He's very keen on walking and keeps setting himself new targets about how far he wants to walk, with the furthest distance being from here to Whittick Manor, which is 13 miles away. I'm extremely proud of him, as I couldn't imagine doing something like this when I was 10 and putting in this much effort for charity. It's also been really nice to see the messages of support he's been getting and the people who are getting behind him, as it's a real boost to his confidence and it inspires him to keep going.
It's time once again to hear from Flashback Roger, who asked for us some more amazing facts.
Hello everyone. Here we go again with another one of my did you know spots. You know, every week I think I'm going to struggle to discover these snippets, but each week there are so many that it's sometimes hard to choose. But choose I did. So here we go with this lot. Did you know that the term third world doesn't refer to poor developing countries? But the reality is that after World War II, the world split into three large geopolitical blocks. The bloc of democratic countries within the American sphere of influence became known as the First World. The Eastern bloc of socialist states was the Second World. And the remaining countries not aligned with either of the two were regarded as the Third World. And if you're a romantic like me, and sign letters or more likely texts and emails to those you love with an X, then you're keeping up a sweet tradition that goes back hundreds of years. The Oxford English Dictionary says that an X was first used to represent a kiss back in 1763 in a letter written by British naturalist Gilbert White. And did you know that the popular Keep Calm and Carry On slogan was originally created by the British government as a form of propaganda to urge citizens to stay civil during World War II, when London frequently endured air raids from Germany? Alas, it never caught on. Years later, in the 2000s, a poster was discovered, and many companies have used it as a slogan or marketing theme for their products since. When Gustav Eiffel designed the tower which bears his name, he added a hidden apartment on the third level of the landmark, but he never lived there. No one did, in fact. Instead, Eiffel used it to entertain guests. These days, you can get a peek at the unique abode through a window if you purchase a ticket for the ride up the tower. And here's a mystery solved, because the duffel bag and duffel coat both get their name from the town of Duffel in Belgium, where the cloth used in the bags was originally sold. The fabric was a coarse, thick woolen cloth that was originally used for the sturdy covering on ship. And finally this week, in March 2019, archaeologists in China reportedly found a 2,000-year-old bronze pot that contained 3.5 litres of a liquid that was referred to in ancient Taoist literature as an elixir of immortality. The elixir was found to be a mixture of potassium nitrate and alunite. However, considering the fact that it was discovered in a tomb, I think it's fair to say that it was about as useful as a chocolate teapot. Any road up, I'll let you have a think about that last one, and I'll go and dunk my tea bag in my old enamel mug and dream up some more bits and pieces for us, but for now, I'll just say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit.
Thank you very much for those, Roger. Fascinating as always. Now we head over to Mina for this week's weather.
The weather for this week looks to be mostly settled with plenty of sunny intervals. Temperatures will be steady throughout the week, hovering around 23 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 5 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:27 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 9th of July, we look at light cloud and light winds with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. On Saturday 10th of July, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. On Sunday 11th of July, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. And finally, Monday 12th of July, all the way to Thursday 15th of July, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 24 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thanks for that weather update, Mina. Now, we have Ed, who brings us Sounds of Nature.
The widgeon is a colourful duck that can often be spotted wheeling around our skies in large flocks. A dabbling duck, its surface feeds on plants and seeds in shallow waters. The widgeon is a medium size, with a round head and short bill. Males are grey with a pink breast, orange head, yellow forehead, and obvious white wing patches. Females are similar to mallard females, with a rusty brown plumage and a pointed tail.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library.
With plenty of signings being made by Wolves and West Brom, we have Ian with the latest football news.
Hello, I'm Ian and here's your latest football news. Wolves have snapped up Barcelona winger Francisco Trincao on a season-long loan, with the option to buy next summer for around £25 million. Having managed to keep his signing under wraps, Trincao comes in having played 42 times for Barca. The La Liga giant paid Portuguese side Braga around £27 million for him last year, and Wolves could land the 21-year-old for a slightly lower sum. He is the club's second summer signing after Colombian centre-half Yerson Mosquera and technical director Scott Sellers said he's a really exciting player. It's an area we'd like more competition in terms of wide players. I think the fans are going to enjoy watching him play. He drives with the ball well and has good creativity. We've watched him a lot, especially over the last couple of months, so he's been on our radar for quite a while. He's got loads of quality. Signing for Barcelona from Braga shows what potential he's got. He's 21 and has played quite a lot of games in La Liga, so we think he's ready for the Premier League. He's a player who drifts past people, and he has a great change of direction when he's moving with the ball. He has great speed over 2 or 3 yards to change direction and get away from people, can score and create, and is an exciting player. Trincao scored 3 times for Barcelona last season and also has 6 Portugal caps to his name. And Wolves have agreed a deal to sign Rayan Aïnouri on a permanent basis from French club Angers. After having the 20-year-old left-back on loan last campaign, the club have now negotiated a unique deal to bring him back to Molineux. Wolves will pay £10 million for him, while Angers have a 50% sell-on. However, Wolves have a buyout clause should they wish to remove that sell-on at a later date. The Frenchman made 24 appearances in Gold and Black last term, scoring once, becoming a regular presence at the back thanks to promising displays and injuries to Johnny Castro, Otto and Fernando Marçal. His permanent arrival is set to allow Ruben Vinagre to leave after 4 years with the club, with Sporting Lisbon close to securing his services. Alex Mowat is an Albion player, after the midfielder put pen to paper on a 3-year deal at the Hawthorns. Voted into the Championship Team of the Season at the end of the 2020-21 campaign, the 26-year-old has joined the Baggies on a free transfer after his contract at Oakwell expired. His arrival sees new boss Valerian Ismail reunited with his former skipper at Barnsley. Mowat turned down the most lucrative deal ever offered to a Barnsley player to join the Baggies. The former Leeds man was the subject of a failed 7-figure bid from Millwall last January and was also on the wanted list of several other Championship clubs. But Albion's status as one of the promotion favourites, together with the chance to work under Ismail again, saw him enticed to the Hawthorns. Last year, Alex put his performances on the next level, Ismail said. He's an outstanding midfield player with outstanding qualities and mentality. He scores goals outside the box, and on set pieces he is very dangerous. He is a hard worker with the right mentality and a lot of energy. The way Alex plays will suit the West Brom mentality. In addition to this, Adam Murray has been confirmed as Albion's new assistant manager after the club paid compensation to land him from Barnsley. Last week, Valerian Ismail was appointed the Baggies' new head coach after the club agreed to pay the Tykes £2 million in compensation. And now Barnsley have been raided yet again, with Birmingham-born Murray also leaving Oakwell for the Hawthorns, as well as sports science coach Johnny Northeast and video analyst Jack Riley. I think we built a really strong relationship as human beings as well as staff over the past few months, Ismail said. The desire to work together and stay together was really strong. That's a must-have quality in our staff. They are dedicated to the principles of how we want to play. They are young and hungry, and I'm really delighted to have the three guys on board. Murray became the youngest manager in the top four divisions of English football when he was appointed Mansfield boss back in 2014. He joined Barnsley as a coach in 2019 and has had two spells as interim boss of the Tykes. In this industry, I think it is really difficult to find people who you are on the same wavelength as, who trust you and that you trust, he said. We hit it off straight away at Barnsley, and as the season went on, our ideas were the same. It clicked, and as soon as he said there might be a chance to join him, though I've had some good years at Barnsley, it was an opportunity that was too good to turn down.
Thanks for that sports update, Ian. And coming up next, we have Tanya, who asked for a profile feature on the artist Claude Monet.
Claude Monet is one of the most well-known of the Impressionist group of painters of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. As a group of artists, the Impressionists tried to represent the elusive quality of light on natural objects such as water and trees by using dabs or strokes of primary colour. At the time, this was a new and innovative style of painting and a great contrast to the period of realism that had preceded it. Whereas realism portrayed objects and people as they appeared in real life, Impressionists created elusive and sometimes blurry images. This led to suggestions that the artists may be short-sighted. However, it's true that Claude Monet did have problems with his eyesight later in life, first being diagnosed with cataracts in 1912. For a decade, he refused cataract surgery, being concerned that his colour vision would be affected, but over the years he became increasingly frustrated and eventually agreed to surgery. By comparing some of Monet's paintings of the same scene, for example the Japanese bridge at Giverny, painted initially in 1899 and then again after he had developed cataracts, it's possible to appreciate the difficulties he encountered in clarity of perception, colour and detail, and the effect the progression of his visual impairment was having on his painting. Monet was born in 1840 in Paris, and his family later moved to Le Havre. His father was a wholesaler and chandler who hoped his son would join him in the business. His mother was a singer and a talented musician who died when Monet was 16. Monet was more interested in becoming an artist than working with his father. Whilst at Le Havre Secondary School for Arts, he began producing charcoal caricatures which he would sell in a local shop. The shopkeeper introduced him to the artist Eugène Budin, who began mentoring Monet and, in particular, teaching him how to paint en plein air, outdoors. Budin was one of the first landscape painters to paint outdoors rather than in a studio. This was a pivotal relationship, and it developed in Monet a love of the play of light on natural forms such as trees and water. Monet acknowledged the influence Budin had on him as an artist, saying, "If I have become a painter, it is entirely due to Eugène Budin." They were to remain good friends with mutual respect for each other's art. In 1861, Monet was drafted into the army and went to serve in North Africa, where he contracted typhoid. His aunt, with whom he lived following the death of his mother, managed to secure his return home after he became ill, but made it conditional on him studying art with Charles Glaire. Glaire was an artist and a teacher whose students included other Impressionists such as Renoir and Sisley. This was a very important part of Monet's painting career, as he met and studied with other artists who were to become part of the emerging Impressionist movement. He also met and had a relationship with Camille Doncieux, who was one of Gleau's models. They had a son together in 1867 and married in 1870. Monet's family did not approve of this relationship, and his financial state was precarious as a little-known painter with the responsibility of providing for his young family. Although he was beginning to achieve recognition as an artist, the French art establishment was not enthusiastic about his style of painting, deriding it as having vulgar colours and appearing unfinished. This was a very difficult and personally challenging period for Monet, leading him to attempt suicide in 1868 by jumping into the River Seine. It was Doncieux who helped him to recover both physically and mentally, although he continued to suffer from depression during his life. Doncieux was the model in many of his paintings, including Camille on the Beach in Trouville, painted whilst on their honeymoon, and La Femme à la Robe Verte, which brought him recognition within the art world. In 1870, Monet and his family travelled to England to escape the Franco-Prussian War. Although they stayed for only a short time, Monet became interested in the work of contemporary English artists such as Constable and Turner. The following year, the family moved to the Netherlands and then returned to France in 1871. The Impressionists were seen as a radical movement, embracing a different approach to painting with less traditional themes and more reference to contemporary life. Their work was often rejected by the Salon de Paris, which was the official art exhibition of the Académie des Beaux-Arts. This led to them forming the Anonymous Society of Painters, Sculptors and Engravers, and holding the first Impressionist exhibition in 1874. It's been suggested that it was Monet who first coined the phrase Impressionism with his painting at the exhibition called Impression Sunrise. However, Monet continued to struggle to achieve success, sometimes selling his paintings for as little as 200 francs. He faced further challenges and sadness in his life when his wife died in 1879, shortly after the birth of their second son. She was aged only 32. Monet became depressed once again, but took refuge in painting with a renewed determination to be successful. Monet's personal life was complicated. He was friends with Ernest Ochède, a department store magnate and art collector who went bankrupt. After the bankruptcy, Ernest and his wife Alice lived with Monet and Camille, and Monet began a relationship with Alice. Following the deaths of Camille and Ernest, Monet and Alice married in 1892. Alice was said to be so jealous of Monet's first wife that she insisted he destroy all photos and letters of her. Only one photograph is thought to have survived. Monet and Alice moved to the house in Giverny, now a place of pilgrimage for his fans, which attracts 500,000 tourists a year. It was here that Monet was to paint his most famous paintings. In his mid-60s, whilst living at Giverny, Monet began to perceive colours as being less intense and vibrant, and he was diagnosed with nuclear cataracts in 1912, but he refused surgery. His paintings between 1918 and 1922 demonstrate the impact his eye condition had on his paintings. His work appeared to become increasingly abstract, using large brush strokes and primary yellow and red tones, but little blue. He complained that the reds had become muddy and dull, and became unhappy with his painting, saying that his eyesight was making him see everything in a complete fog, and he destroyed many paintings. His friend Georges Clemenceau, the French Prime Minister, described this, saying, "Monet would attack his canvases when he was angry, and his anger was born of dissatisfaction with his work. Monet destroyed canvases in his quest for perfection." Monet sought advice from ophthalmologist Richard Liebreich, who was very interested in art and had written about the effect eye disease had on artists such as Turner. He advised cataract surgery, but Monet refused until he was 82. when he eventually agreed to surgery on both eyes. He had been diagnosed as blind the year before. It's suggested that following surgery there can be an increased perception of ultraviolet light, which is otherwise invisible, and this may have led to Monet's paintings looking quite different following the treatment. By 1925, Monet was satisfied with his work, saying that he was happily seeing everything again. He died the following year, 1926, at the age of 86.
Now we move over to Craig, who has for us his Black Country joke book.
Hello, I'm Craig. I'm going to tell you some jokes from my Black Country joke book. I interviewed a bloke from Tipton for a job. Can you perform under pressure, I asked. No, he replied. I can do a great Bohemian Rhapsody. Here's another one for you. I went into a pet shop in Bilston, bought 12 bees, but the shopkeeper gave me 13. I said, you've given me one too many here, mate. He said the last one was a freebie. And finally, I had a mate that quit his job at the sewage works. He said it was boring just going through the motions every day. I'm Craig, and that was my Black Country joke book.
Thanks for those rib ticklers, Craig. Now we head over to Mina, who has for us the answers to this week's quiz.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. When was the term the Third World coined? The answer, after World War II. Question 2. When did an X first used as a kiss to end a letter? And the answer, 1763. Question 3. What well-used slogan first appeared on posters in 1940s in Britain? And the answer here is, keep calm and carry on. Question 4. What was hidden in the Eiffel Tower when it was built? And the answer here is, an apartment. Question 5. The duffel coat is named after a town. Where is that town? And the answer here is, Belgium. And finally, question 6. What was found in a flask in a tomb in China in 2019? And the answer here is, the elixir of immortality. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to guess the sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a passing train. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we now head over to Graham Fisher for another edition of In My Opinion.
Hello. Shortly after UK currency was decimalised, which to me seems like yesterday, but shock horror, was in reality 1971. And when those of us who lived through it were recalibrating ourselves with the new, while still mourning the comforting familiarities of the old, I was tempted by a colleague to make my inaugural visit into a betting shop. Here, under his avuncular guidance, I laid a stake for the equivalent of the old 2 shillings and sixpence, or 12 and a half new pence. Imagine my unalloyed joy when some three-legged nag I picked with a pin crossed the line first, and I was rewarded with the life-changing sum of 10 shillings and sixpence, by then better known as 52½ new pence. Lo, here endeth my first and only experience in a bookies, since over half a lifetime down the line I still take smug satisfaction in being one of the few who have made a killing, taken their winnings and run, never to return. From which it may reasonably be presumed that I am not a gambling man. Even so, I am prepared to lay a sizeable wager that a snippet of news relegated to the inside pages by dint of one continent bursting into flames whilst another drowns under a biblical deluge will someday be seen as a symbolic point of reference in the perpetual evolution of our language. In early December 2019, it was announced that a society dedicated to preserving the, quote, much abused apostrophe, was to be disbanded. John Richards, who worked in journalism for much of his career, started the Apostrophe Protection Society in 2001 after he retired. Calling it a day, he wrote on his website, "Fewer organisations and individuals are now caring about the correct use of the apostrophe in the English language. We and our many supporters worldwide have done our best, but the ignorance and laziness present in modern times have won. Lest we think this is all too inconsequential and so what, it was a blockbusting little tome of 2003 by literary editor and broadcaster Lynn Truss that illustrated the importance of apostrophes, commas, colons, semicolons and other grammatical ticks to an audience that, judging by the sales, was ravenous for redemption. The title of the book, Eats, Shoots and Leaves, The Zero Tolerance Approach to Punctuation, is a syntactic ambiguity. That is, a verbal fallacy arising from an ambiguous or erroneous grammatical construction and is derived from a joke about bad punctuation as explained on the back of a thus slightly paraphrased. A panda walks into a cafe. He orders a sandwich, eats it, then draws a gun and fires 2 shots in the air. As the panda makes towards the exit, he drops a badly punctuated wildlife manual and the waiter turns to the relevant entry to find an explanation for this strange behaviour. Panda, large black and white bear-like mammal, native to China. Eats, shoots and leaves. Groan. To be brutally honest, the book itself needed the services of a ruthless editor, and I feel the point was adequately made long before I was a quarter of the way through, but hey, it sold in numbers I could never dream of for my modest scribblings, so I'll do the noble thing by not tainting the basket with the taste of my sour grapes. Anyway, the point is, the proper use of language should start with schools and parenting, but will endure through life by the reading of well-written books in whatever format of electronic or hard copy they nowadays take. And therein lies the problem. Only the scrupulous editor, fastidious proofreader, or judicious reviewer, whom by definition must, unlike the casual reader, go through the work with a fine tooth comb, only they know just how badly many books are written. Ah, now, I can see the barred slings and arrows of outrageous fortune being turned in my direction to repel incursions of intellectual snobbishness, but please hang fire and don't shoot the messenger just yet. Our wonderful language is constantly morphing. Witness the number of words annually included in and dropped from that bastion of grammar and usage, the Oxford English Dictionary. Old words become outmoded or unfashionable, whilst new ones, particularly those associated with rapid changes in technology, run the gamut from slang or vernacular to mainstream, along with the punctuation that helps steer their interpretation. Many survive the course over the long term, and it is said that someone familiar with the Black Country dialect is well equipped to tackle Chaucer, author of the Canterbury Tales, who is considered as critical in legitimising the use of Middle English. Right now, I have in front of me a small library of books defining long-abandoned words and grammar. I relish them and occasionally bring one or two examples out of retirement to re-employ in my musings, not so much for effects, but more an act of rebellion against their devaluation. Let's be honest, the 16th century pilled garlic is infinitely more colourful than its mundane contemporary analogue of bald-headed. Of course, I recognise that our language is constantly evolving, and I do not stand King Canute-like resisting its march. It's more the case of finding a certain reassurance in the robustness of the time served, yet equally, I'm amongst the first to welcome how our language transmutes with time and circumstances. And, taking a lump hammer to further crack the veneer of pretension, patois, dialect and poetic license all play their part. Lewis Carroll's 19th century masterpiece of nonsense, Jabberwocky, is an object lesson in how to mangle our native tongue. In 2016, Soul of Bones by Mike McCormack, an entire book written as a single sentence, won the Goldsmith Prize for fiction that breaks the mould or opens up new possibilities in the novel form. Even the aforementioned Bard himself used the technique of emphasis created by grammatical anomalies, as in, parting is such sweet sorrow. Sorrow? Sweet? Really? All notable, though all grammatically incorrect, in the usually accepted sense. Which is what exactly? Well, let's begin to answer that one by asserting that a prerequisite for any language is a structure in which the message is directed from a transmitter to a receiver to effectively convey the same meaning as were formulated by the transmitter. To achieve this without a mutually understood structure is all but impossible. It's as if we're communicating in different languages or different variations of the same language. Which, in fact, we are. Riding the hinterland between nebulous thought and accurate expression is unforgiving territory. The structure may not immediately be apparent, but it is nonetheless there. The Unwinese gobbledygook of the late self-styled Professor Stanley Unwin was impenetrable, but became more coherent when he explained his rules for concocting it. Et voila! He had a structure for his zany comedic language that transgressed negligence of its own parameters. And therein lies the crux, in exactly the same way that Tommy Cooper could mess up his magic tricks to hilarious effect only because he knew how to do them properly in the first place. He was a leading light in the magic circle. I contend that it is possible to safely deviate from the rules of grammar only when one first knows how to skillfully navigate them. Similarly, compare and contrast the distinction between the practice of dropping apostrophes at, say, King's Cross or the Regent's Canal, with blatant misuse when they are thrown in arbitrarily or left out erroneously, and we begin to identify a distinction between fashionable idleness and unpardonable illiteracy. Or indeed, personal preference. Parliamentarian Rebecca Lung Bailey publicly declares she doesn't mind whether her Lung and Bailey are hyphenated or not, as long as they're both there. Whilst actress Helena Bonham Carter says her Bonham Carter hyphen is optional. Then there are developments that oblige us to bend the rules whether we want to or not. A hyphen, in techno-speak, must sometimes be represented as an underscore, otherwise, as comedian David Walliams said in his prescient Little Britain parody, Computer Says No. All of this perplexes me daily, since I live in Drover's Barn, spelt with no apostrophe. A charming idiosyncrasy that has its own sense of license and at no great loss to its meaning. I ponder whether it is named by a predecessor with a sense of grammatic experimentalism, or the possessor of a lamentable measure of ignorance, or personal preference. In all cases, it's grammatically incorrect. Then I realise that few who visit even notice, let alone comment, and I understand the dissolution of the Apostrophe Society. And I fear it is my sad duty to suggest it is not just the poor apostrophe. The battle is far from over, as our grammatical regimen is increasingly mauled by the rise of, take a guess, yes, social media. Demanding little attention span and requiring even less consideration to detail, it is a prime mover in the trend to shout in capitals, representing repetitive volume, rather than convince by considered persuasion. Behind every good writer lies an even better editor, yet modern social media enables one to become their own moderator when neither qualified nor competent to do so. Inane abbreviations and puerile emoticons compound downward pressure and the patina of trust from messages sent or retweeted from those we already know gives strength to the perpetuation and acceptance of errors. Amongst these, the rubrics of good syntax and accurate punctuation are just plain inconvenient. So then, having acknowledged that language will evolve, does it matter that we should trouble to constrain it within a universally accepted structure? In September 1999, after almost 10 months travelling to Mars, and when NASA scientists were on tenterhooks with anticipated discoveries on the Red Planet, the eponymous and hugely expensive Mars Climate Orbiter plunged into the atmosphere and was destroyed. The reason? Someone had programmed the thrusters using the wrong units of measurement. A cartoon of the time showed a smashed spaceship on the Martian surface with a sardonic caption, metric, English, whatever. It might just as pertinently have said, eat shoots and leaves, please review before liftoff. But why quibble when we can instead bask in the judgment of luminaries such as John C. Wells, Professor Emeritus of Phonetics at University College London and former President of the English Spelling Society. Honestly, you just couldn't make that one up. Who, in a proclamation that must have been a dagger in the heart of John Richards, albeit being berated by then Prime Minister David Cameron, described the apostrophe as a waste of time. Ah, well, for those less enlightened who persist in defending anachronistic convictions, there will always be the protective firewall of disparaging humour. And, as they say in these parts, complete with apostrophe, there's lovely. Now that's satire.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!